Okay, I'd like to bring this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee for the Board of Education of School District 41. Today, September 12th, 2011, and a little after 6 p.m. First order of business this evening, then, will be the review and approval of minutes from the August 22nd, 2011 meeting. Would you please take a moment and review those minutes? And I just wanted to caution the committee members, we have, we're due to conclude here this evening at 7 o'clock because of the new employee greetings that we're going to have. So we need to move rather quickly through these items this evening, if you don't mind. Again, sure. If anybody ever has any questions, you're more than welcome to send me an email or give me a call if you have anything that's not covered in this particular meeting. But I know, you, Drew, you have an interest in spending some time talking about the District Finance Advisory Committee. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure you have adequate time.
Okay.
So, first order of business then this evening will be the annual review of the Board of Education Policy 2.170, Procurement of Architectural Engineering and Land Surveying Services. So, in accordance with the previously mentioned board policy, it's requested or required of the administration to annually review the architectural and engineering services of those firms that we currently have employed with the district. And basically, we use four different firms. We use FGM for our architectural services. We use Erickson Engineering for our civil work, which is storm water and things of that nature. We have AMSCO, who does our mechanical, electrical, and plumbing engineering work. And then finally, we use DC Engineers for our forensic or structural engineering work that needs to be completed. What I've done is I've created a grid, identified overall qualifications and general skills, and then tried to give them a numerical assessment in terms of what I thought their services were like over the past year. Numbers 1 through 3 would indicate that they're operating below expectations, they're not functioning at the expected level. 4 through 7 is indicative of them meeting our expectations. And 8 through 10 is they exceed our expectations, performance well beyond the performance of other firms. I've also included some comments column there, just to kind of give you an additional idea if I thought something might need to be a little further dug into or explained. So I've identified several areas here, and I don't know that it's necessary that I go through each area of overall qualifications. I'm sure you've had an opportunity to review them. All of the firms that we have had basically fell within the 6, 7, or 8 measure, numerical measure. So all of them meet or exceed our expectations on a couple of items. Any questions? I was requesting to do this specifically, Dan. We had some requests, and I wanted to be able to address those.
Yeah, no, thank you for doing this. I did review this. The one thing I didn't get a chance to compare it to was the
policy. I think the items at the bottom of the matrix include some of those.
They are on items, I believe, M, N, and O, location of firm's administrative offices, workload of consultant personnel, and technological resources.
Yeah, and then the other professional qualifications, I think, was another one of the areas, and we felt that all of these really get at more specifics about professional qualifications. So this is more comprehensive than what's in the policy. The policy is really, the characteristics in the policy are somewhat difficult to assess unless you are doing an RFP, because you're going to be asking some specific questions. So when Bob and I looked at the policy as well as what, you know, other districts may be doing and what we thought were important characteristics to include, Bob put together this rubric, which was a little bit more comprehensive than even that policy. But I can grab that procedure and pull it down for you so you can see what it exactly says there.
Yeah,
I think
I
call.
But you said something about something more in detail later on.
Well, no, I mean, we would say on an annual basis, this is what we would do unless the board wishes or the finance committee wishes for us to present to them annually in some different way.
I do not. What are you going to do with this info, Dan?
No, I thought I was referring to something else.
In the green sheet, I said that I would be presenting something that's more formal to finance committee. That's this.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like this was the first cut and you were going to do something else. So this is it. Okay. No, this is, just what I was asking.
Okay.
So going forward on an annual basis, staff will prepare this, present it to finance, and essentially it's a pass or fail kind of for these providers.
I would say yes, and I would say this is a pretty exhaustive analysis of the different types of services that they provide or the different elements that comprise their full services. Spent some significant time in gathering data and information, and I would hope that this would meet the committee's future needs.
I would certainly think so. My goal with this is that we put it on a, and we've chatted about that, to put it on a on a timetable that we do this on an annual basis. And you tell me what is the best time, when you want to present that to the finance, and you'll put it then put it on the spreadsheet.
That's what we would do. We would keep it on what we call our board items, and then I would bring this to the finance committee, more preferably probably the first meeting in August every year, okay, before we actually settle down and start talking about contract renewals. So this would be done earlier. This would probably be sort of the first step in that contract renewal process.
The next question, maybe it's more perfunctory than anything, but in terms of documenting that we've done this, it goes through the minutes of finance, and that's how we memorialize that the process was complied with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's what I believe it would be necessary here.
Okay. Which is a little bit different from what we were doing before.
Oh, yeah. This is the first time we've developed a matrix for this specific professional service for the district.
This is outstanding. This is very, very well done. You can tell there was a lot of time and effort went into this. So,
Thank you.
Very, very pleased.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just curious. You talk about a calendar. I remember policy. I went to that IASB seminar. They were talking about like something similar, a calendar of, when you're in policy, these are the school events that happen, and these are some of the policy events that tie into that. I didn't know. Do we have a finance calendar? Or like an annual, like yours? I know there's things we do on an annual basis, but I don't know if there's like
a published.
Yeah, or just for something we could look at. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't publish. I maintain a list of spreadsheet. It's a list of what we call board items that need to happen every month when we walk it through the finance committee to the board for discussion, ultimately for action. I mean, I know there's certain things that have to be done in a certain period of time every month, every quarter, every year. So that's how we, God forbid anything ever happens where we don't file something in a timely fashion, but that's what this calendar does. It allows us to maintain a calendar of events so things don't fall off of our desk.
So we do, I mean, it's certainly something that we could share with you. It's an internal document that just monitors for each of our departments when certain things come before the board and our, kind of shape the board agendas in the perfunctory ways, things you have to do.
Now, is that if something happened to Bob, other people would have access to that.
Yes.
So it's accessible to other department.
Well, it's not accessible to me, surprisingly, but it is to Maureen. So Maureen has access to their finance file. They share that because there'll be an exchange of documents as a document appropriation. I was being facetious when I said it's not accessible to me because as long as Maureen has it, I was just being funny.
We have a sort of a calendar of events that for each one of our departments, curriculum, human resources, finance, and so forth. So and Maureen does maintain sort of that master file, so we always know what's coming up monthly, quarterly, and annually.
Now, for the other departments, that's not so true. But Mike would always be able to get if we had an emergency and we needed to get into someone's files, we could always do so.
Okay. The next order of business then this evening will be the iPad rollout, and I'm going to let Mike speak to that.
Well, this is part of our technology plan. So bringing out emerging technologies as well as refreshing current technology that we have in the buildings. We currently have 50 iPads in the district right now, 20 at Franklin, 20 at Churchill, and then Hadley has 10. So this proposal would get enough iPads in the building so we have a set of 30 in each building. That's about a classroom size set. So we have enough to fulfill the need of a single classroom at a time. So every student would have a one-on-one or one-to-one use of the iPad. So this is kind of to begin starting to use more tablet technology. iPads are kind of ahead of the market right now. This is the beginning of this sort of push. We've also included a few extra iPads to be used by the 21st century classrooms as to still be determined how those would be allocated. So we'll also purchase storage carts for each one for charging and security. And we approached Apple about pricing for the iPads. They came back to us with $538 for the iPad 2. I think normally they're about $599 for iPad. And they also have a storage cart solution for these. They'll charge them and sync them at the same time. They're a little cost prohibitive for a pilot, so we're just going to go with the same storage cards we're using for the laptops and the netbooks right now. So they'd be primarily used for storage and security. We're starting to explore some of the different apps that are available, as well as starting to change some of our wireless infrastructure to support them and accommodate some of the things that the iPads need in order to access certain resources. So,
what kind of things do they need that your netbooks
will? Well, since they don't really log on to the network,
right.
We don't use a username and password to log on. We've got kind of a layered level of security for internet access. So the way the iPads access it, it's more sort of like an anonymous access, almost like if you were at Starbucks. So there's certain things that you're not going to be able to get to. So some of those sites, we start to have to create another category for iPads. We have to make certain sites available, as well as being able to block certain sites that we would normally block anyway. So there's some adjustments we would have to make to that. And this will start to prepare us for the next cycle of our refresh, 3 years down the road, when as tablet technology starts to evolve and emerge, we'll be able to better determine what's the best hardware platform that's going to fit us. The iPads right now kind of lead the market, so it's a good place to start. Whether or not that would be the choice we would make 3 years from now when we look to refresh the computers that we're bringing in now or the laptops that we're bringing in now, we'll have to see. We'll continue to evaluate this over the next 3 years and see how it fits into our plans and our infrastructure of technology, but more importantly, how they're going to fit into the curriculum and day-to-day classroom use.
I think one of the things, too, that we've talked about is the portability of the iPad and the applications that our elementary schools have used so far with the primary students, in particular with the touch technology, has been helpful in letter development, word development, and several different language arts applications. I think, too, as we have part of our long-range plan is a group that's coming together to look at kind of a redefinition of our curriculum around problem-based learning, and that would put students in flexible groupings throughout a school day and throughout a school. And so having portable technology is going to be important with that as we try to roll that out next year.
Right, and it'll also begin to get our teachers and students used to using the tablet technology and some of the nuances that go along with that. I think the students will have no trouble at all adapting to it, but our staff will need some time to adapt to that and become accustomed to using that kind of technology in a day-to-day use as well.
How do these interact with the smart boards?
Well, there is an adapter that we can hook them up to the projector. They're not going to work with the smart board simply because we can't load the driver to get the touch capability to work. At least right now, I don't believe there's an app.
Do you mean the students sitting in the classroom doing something on their iPad and it's and like up there, or do you just mean the teacher driving the smart
board? No, what you just said. The ones where you see them working and then able to pass
it to project. That they'll do right now. That's just a matter of having an adapter to plug it in to an outlet like that. You see that little blue cable coming out, the blue head of the adapter coming out. And it'll use the projector, and the resolution does work with it. We've tried it a couple times already. Just so, again, for the portability of it, to be able to just plug it in and either have the teacher lead a lesson plan that way or even have students come in and use it and be able to see what they're doing up on the screen. So it works from that standpoint. It does not, it will not at least at this point work for the touch capability. So if you had the tablet and you were using it, you couldn't go up to the touch panel and start manipulating it on the board at this point. But you could use it for presentation and projection purposes, yes.
So in other words, if a teacher had students working and she said, show me your work, show me what you've got there, Tommy, it could be projected up to the...
It could be, right.
They walked up and plugged
if
it in.
If you walked up and plugged
it's
in.
Not,
it's not
a...
Right.
Instant.
It's not a teacher having a console that can check in on everybody and then say, hey, let's look at this. Or doing some kind of a polling, you know, where they're talking.
Kids could
saying,
respond.
Okay, everyone tell me what you think the capital of Illinois is, and they all enter it on their iPads. And
then graphs.
Right. That's what we'd like to see.
That's what we'd like to see.
Right.
Yeah.
It wouldn't project. Now, if you wanted to do sort of just like a poll or a survey like that, they could use it and then put in whatever they wanted for the survey. It's just not going to work for presentation purposes to be able to show it on.
Well, the thing is, there's dedicated hardware that teachers have now that they can pull out and do these things that if you've got a high-powered programmable device, it's really just
automatic
software to create a group that does these things eventually. You know, to me, I'd like to see things driven by the application, not that we talked about this afternoon.
Not the equipment.
We want iPads.
Right.
We want to be able to do this, a tablet-based technology. The iPad's the best thing to do. And maybe it's just the way it's presented, but I'd rather just not see. We want iPads.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what this is. I'd like to see. We've got 21st century learning that's based on tablet-based input, and this is the best solution at the moment.
Right. I completely agree with that. This seems to be the best solution right now. But whenever I talk about tablet technology, I always talk about it as tablet technology. I don't talk about it in terms of an iPad or a Galaxy, or any of the brand names. It's a piece of hardware that is a platform that we're going to use. This just happens to be, it's just incidental at this point that happens to be iPads.
Right.
And we can talk a little bit more in the proposal about some of the apps that we would find useful for
what
students
doing,
at the elementary.
What comes standard in iOS, what is going to be additional cost to use, you know, I think that's things we to understand long term, because it's not just a piece of hardware.
iOS, I mean, you've got the YouTube app that comes with it.
Right.
There's not a lot in the way of educational applications that come with the iOS.
And that's what, you know, are we talking another $200 or $300 per, you know,
well, right now,
tablet to make it, you know, something we need, or are we talking another $20? I mean, a rough ballpark in what the additional software expenses are going to be to use these would be good. Because I think Most people just get an iPad. There's all things built in that they use, but kids in class aren't going to do that. They're running applications. To me, once you're in the application, whether it got kicked off by iOS or in Android, the hardware is the same for the most part. I mean, yeah, Apple looks like, but the rest of the technology is pretty common across everyone making those types of devices.
Right, with the exception of the OS. I mean, the OS is different from one platform.
But how much are the students actually the OS is a big part of what they're doing. I think they're pretty much getting into an application, aren't they? Or explain to me how it's different, you know, that makes such a difference. I mean, Angry Birds, once you're running it, not that that's what they're doing, can you really tell you're on an iPad versus
the Android? One of the upsides of the iPad is it doesn't come sort of gunked up with a lot of games and applications.
Right.
Like with some of the others we look at, there could be dozens of different just games and things that we would normally have students working on it anyway. So it's a little bit more streamlined operating system from that perspective. And we're right now in the process of evaluating apps, trying to eliminate any redundancy, any overlap with some of the applications, because we'll get requests from teachers for different apps.
Right.
And they go through the same process any new software would. So we're not looking at a lot of overlap with different applications. And we also need to streamline that just from the standpoint of deployment, not just from the dollars and cents for the app, but also how we're going to deploy that to 140 or even 200 different iPads spread out across different buildings. So right now it's a learning curve for us as well. It's a relatively new platform, and I just think it's important for us to be able to get this new technology in our kids' hands sooner than later, so that they're with our staff more up to speed when we're looking at the next refreshment of our worker, because it could be very different from what we're looking at today for hardware in the classrooms. So this is just another step in that direction.
What classes would use these? Like what subject?
Pretty much all. I would see these almost as taking the place of a netbook or a laptop that it would have a suite of applications, just like we do now. Every PC in the district has a suite of applications that are geared towards education, and it's pretty much a standard platform that we have. It's the image that we do every summer. We create an image for these machines. It has the operating system and your business tools like the Microsoft Office suite, but it also has a collection of student applications. And I would see using these in the same way. So we have sort of a uniformed approach, so we don't have a lot of unique applications on different iPads. So we do have some control to be able to funnel that in.
So we have some in the district today. What classes are, is there a theme or social studies or science or math? Or
well, they've only just started using them for like the last week and a half. So we really haven't got the data collected yet to be able to tell you where they're being used most or what they're being or how they're being used. We got the original 40 in last year at the very end of the school year. So by the time we got them in and inventory and got a handle on how to get them working, the school year was over. So we're just starting to use them now. I know at Churchill they can't keep them in the library. They're using that every day.
I did speak with Scott, and he said the primary classes are using them significantly for language arts and word study. And the intermediate classes are using them predominantly for literacy development right now as well.
But I could see them being a real benefit to the primary grade levels. Because you don't have that dexterity yet to manage the keyboard and manipulate the keyboard into the touchpad. It'll be a lot easier and I think more fun for younger kids to be able to get in there and use some of the applications and just get on the internet.
I know we're going to talk about the netbooks too, but I guess just one thing I'm not clear on is, you know, we just got all the smart boards installed and we're starting to get use on those.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to get some more time in on that first before we start doing the next thing and the next thing?
Well, the smart boards have been, this is actually the third year we've had smart boards in the district. It's just been sort of an incremental build. This past summer, we did the big rollout. So we've got a collection of teachers that have been using the smart board for the last couple of years, and they're pretty comfortable with it. They'll be able to share that knowledge with their colleagues in their buildings and across the district. You know, is it too much too soon? Is that the question?
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of wondering.
I don't believe, I think we've been kind of behind the times when it comes to technology. You've sat on an old model for a long time, and it's time for us to start moving forward. I think teachers just like us will catch up, but particularly with a product like the iPad, it's such a consumer-level product that I think you're going to have a lot of teachers that either own one already or students that own one already and are already comfortable with them and know how they work. And then you'll have teachers that will catch up. So, yes, there'll be a certain learning curve that comes along with that, but I think there'll be good things that follow once we get past it.
I think the teachers who are already using the smart boards with some flexibility are going to obviously be comfortable adding iPads. Those new to the smart board this year, we have commitments to user groups, so they are meeting 9 times throughout the year to do sharing, and so the acclimation really is highly supported by the peer group that is doing that, and we're not adding so many iPads that there's, you know, going to be a one-to-one correlation in any one classroom. They're typically being checked out in like groups of 10 for center work. And
Christina Kellum, our instructional technology coordinator, has an aggressive schedule for training on the smart boards as well as any of the other softwares and new technology. Yeah, so there's always training available after school. I think she usually has at least 4 to 5 opportunities a month after school. So that and also with the Institute Day that we've been doing the last couple of years, we were able to kind of bring out all this new technology and strategies for using them in the classroom, I think will also be a big benefit to teachers in getting them past that learning curve.
You know, actually, in my conversation with Scott, he was also saying that teachers were requesting a tablet technology to be able to use and explore in their classrooms.
Right. So I feel like this is at least enough to get a classroom set in without saturating the building with new technology that they'd be overwhelmed with.
Okay, I'd like to move on to the next order of business then. It's the grade school social studies network law. Again, Mike will be presenting.
You know, I guess one other thing I talked to Ann about on this was just allocating 5 iPads to the 8 21st century classrooms. And do you really need them in the classroom all the time?
As Mike said, that's not been determined perhaps exactly yet. We're meeting with that group this week.
I mean, given they've already got the new furniture and all this other stuff, I just don't want to add to the, well, now they've got dedicated iPads. I mean, they can schedule an iPad out of the library just like anyone else. I mean, there shouldn't be that much difference in instruction between all the grades, just they've got different furniture in this room. We really need to, I mean, what?
Well, we're hoping that we'll see them do some experimentation with different approaches and utilizing technology, you know, in a maybe a more aggressive way than our other teachers are being asked to. But we haven't fully decided that each classroom will absolutely get 5. That's going to be part of our conversation with them and the expectations and the outcomes we would expect from them.
And I think the increased use of technology in the classroom will impact the instruction in the way it's
Well, I don't agree. I don't doubt that. I just want equity. You know, let's make it a shared resource. I just don't see, you know, how you need to dedicate it there unless there's something that different that like every teacher, even without new furniture, should still be able to implement these. I don't see how the furniture is going to make the iPad experience different.
I see what Steve, because I was looking at the netbook too. I'm concerned with putting all this stuff in the 21st century classroom as a pilot, because when I look at a pilot, I look at not as you pilot and then it's a given you go forward. You pilot, you look at what worked, what didn't work, and if you're piling in multiple factors, then it kind of muddies the water on. Well, we saw this improvement. Was it this factor? You know, was it the environment? Was it the iPad? Was it the netbook? Then you know it's not real clear. So I guess I kind of agree with Steve on that point. I'd rather see us not do it, or half the 21st century classrooms get it, half don't. There's ways that you could kind of split that up to see, and then see if there's a different level of improvement.
And we're talking about improvement in student learning, documented by.
How are we going to evaluate the 21st century?
Well, I think we have two different views of how we're going to look at that. The furniture is not there to improve achievement necessarily. It's to improve the flexibility of the environment, given the limitations of the environment, number one. So does it have a direct correlation to increased student achievement? I mean, whether we added iPads and netbooks or anything else to that classroom, I'd be hard-pressed to say that there's a direct correlation between furniture and achievement. What we would hope is that the teacher's ability to meet the needs of students more flexibly and to create different environments that will increase learning. Not sure we'll see that on math. Not sure we may see it on other kinds of assessments rather than just standardized assessments. So ultimately, the goal is to increase your learning by creating a total learning environment for students that are most conducive. But I understand what you're saying. Isolate your variables is fine. I don't know that we can isolate a learning variable to furniture in a classroom, I guess is what I would be saying.
Right. Well, then, I mean, I guess the devil's advocate is going to be, why are you spending this on that showing results? I mean, we can't somehow demonstrate.
Well, results might be just something different. Results might be satisfaction. Results might be, I could do so much more with my classroom as a result of this. So we had experiences that were more varied and enriching. So one might correlate that to an expectation for increased achievement. But again, I don't know that it could be more effective instruction because you had, do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm not sure you can isolate a variable such as classroom equipment and say that in and of itself it will lead to higher achievement. I think that's been the dilemma with technology from the onset of bringing technology into classrooms. Does it change, does it increase student achievement? Well, I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it either way. You could either look at, if we don't do it, we're going to slide backwards because everyone else, and when they go to high school or whatever, college, they're going to be behind. So then you could look at it as a factor to at least maintain this versus achieve. I just think that, you know, if you can't, you need to have some way of saying that, yes, this helps or yes, this improves. Otherwise, you've got to ask yourself, why are we doing
that? Well, and I think we can do that from the standpoint of creating rubrics of use and how teachers have used the various pieces in that classroom, whether it's technology, whether it's furniture, and judge the effectiveness of that, which we'll do over the course of the year. We're not going to not evaluate it. I'm not sure, though. I guess I'm just saying I'm not sure that there'll be a single outcome that will be the result of any of the changes. If we change lighting in that, those classrooms in another year or two, does that change, can we correlate that directly to a learning outcome? But we might be able to correlate it to an environmental outcome. Fatigue, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, my concern isn't, you know, to measure this or the furniture is one classroom.
Your issue is equity.
It's equity. It's something that's checked out, and I'd rather more or less make the teacher kind of go prove they need the resource, then it's just there. Mm-hmm. You know, then you are spurring them to think of a way, I'm going to do something different. You know, if five people want that one resource at the same time, who decides if they get it? You know, is the person saying, well, who has the most innovative new way of using this that we're going to find out what's going on? You know what I mean?
Well, that works on a schedule. There's a certain amount of technology that's available from the library, to like laptops and that we have an online scheduler for, so teachers will schedule it and they'll take them out. The one thing about the pilot aspect of the technology, I mean, just because we're going to propose this today doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be what we'll move forward with when we do the refresh at the grade schools. This is truly a pilot. And it's also incorporating technology that we're already investing in, and then testing them out in these rooms. It may be a little bit more controlled environment, and maybe an environment that's under a little bit more scrutiny than the other classrooms. So we can collect a little bit more data, a little bit more specific data. It would be a lot harder to do on the laptops and things that we check out of the library. So whether or not that's something we decide with the refresh at the grade schools next year we wanted to move forward with, I kind of doubt it. But 3 years from now, would that be a platform that we might look at in each classroom? Maybe, you never know. As far as checking them out from the libraries, I mean, that's always a possibility. We do have an online scheduler that at least gives us an idea of who's checking them out. The only issue we run into with a limited resource like we're talking about with the iPads is it generally tends to be the same three or four teachers to check them out over and over. And then the other teachers don't get an opportunity to use them, or
well, that's where you've got somebody kind of, you know,
yeah.
What are you going to do with it, you know, or something. So I don't want to belabor this. I know we got a long agenda here. We can talk about it more. I have a concern there. I'd just like to hear more.
The same is true for the furniture, Dan. There's no guarantee that we'll find this furniture to be, you know, really 21st century furniture that we want. It may not be.
Oh, I'm just wondering if we have, if they just, my parents just got in. Do we have a day of time or experience to move forward? Or should we maybe wait and give it a school year or a semester or something, maybe bring this back in the spring?
Well, that's what my assistants were telling me, too. But I think at some point, we got to put in the extra time, we got to put in the extra effort to move ourselves forward. And we're at that point, we're in that cycle right now, where I do believe it's time to do it. Otherwise, we're going to be playing catch up 2-3 years from now. So
I've had three coming out for Christmas. Quad four.
All right, do you want me to move on to the smart boards?
Netbooks.
We're proposing 170 netbooks. Initially, this is to support the social studies program and the online TCI website. Some teachers at the grade school level have chosen to adopt that platform, or the entire curriculum is available online. And the netbooks seem to be a good fit for that. We tried them out with a pilot of 15 last year at Lincoln, and had a couple of teachers try out the online social studies curriculum using the netbooks. They seemed pleased with it. And Karen, she seemed interested in moving that forward. And this would also be part of our refresh for next summer for the grade schools. So these netbooks would be incorporated in with the hardware refresh at the grade schools. But initially, they'd be used for the teachers that did choose to use the online curriculum for social studies, and that's the TCI website. So that's where these netbooks would be positioned, and I believe it's at every building. We'd also order storage carts for charging and securing them. And like I said, this would also be incorporated in with our refresh next year. We'd already have those purchased up front. The iPads, just to go back to that was a budgeted purchase, so we've got dollars available for that. We would purchase those outright. The netbook, since this is a kind of part of a bigger thing, and we've already got netbooks on lease now that will come off lease in 3 years. At that point, it's fair market value. We would get rid of those, so we don't have to deal with the disposal costs. We will do the same with these netbooks and put them on pretty close to the same cycle. It'll be a little bit more than 3 years. By the time these come off lease, we'll be through that school year that would, again, we'd be looking at refreshing at the grade school level. So it kind of be incorporated in with the netbook purchase from last year. This is a new model as well. It's not the 5103 that we have at the grade school, at the junior high. This is a little bit bigger. It's an 11-inch screen on these. Other specs are pretty close to the same, but I like the idea of the bigger monitor, particularly when they're working on the online social studies curriculum. So the proposal, and these also, we had some built in for the 21st century classrooms, and they could also be absorbed into the general population of technology in the grade schools as needed or if needed. And that's pretty much it. Any questions on the notebooks?
Yeah, the new model, I'm just curious.
I'll email you the model.
Yeah, I gotta believe there's a new processor in there.
When we talked about netbooks last year, was that just for Hadley?
Just Hadley.
It's just Hadley.
The social studies curriculum, that was like my first year here. Can we redo it, or?
And last year was the first year of full implementation, and those teachers that had chosen online, the online version of that social studies curriculum, one group piloted having the netbooks as the vehicle for it. So we want to move forward and at least have, as the proposal says, one for every two children in those classrooms. Not every classroom has the online version.
I just saw the word subscription here, so I was curious, does that like a yearly subscription or something. But so that's on top of what we already bought with curriculum, I guess.
We put that in our original proposal, I believe, the online subscription, and which part, you know, how many classrooms had made that decision. So they don't get textbooks. So the classrooms that got textbooks, that there was that proposal had a cost for the textbooks and then a cost for the online subscription.
So with these netbooks, first, I'm trying to figure out how for social studies you. And when I read this, it just seems like you're going to have one netbook being used for one period and then sitting there for the rest of the day. Or do you have the schedules changed up enough
well,
so that social studies at a different time and people are swapping them? Or what's the procedure?
I mean, the social studies runs throughout the day depending on the schedule of the grade level. Because of our literacy block.
There's sharing that goes on. Mm-hmm. But the netbooks wouldn't just be exclusive to that website. I mean, they could use those netbooks for a number of other things during the course of the day. The one nice thing about the netbooks is it does give you full access to our network. It gives them access to their shared drives and their personal folders and files as well as full access to the internet. The only thing we're limited by on these is any kind of instructional apps that are going to too much of the resources on the laptop. Anything else?
Oh, you didn't say how many classrooms this was for.
Karen gave me that info and I don't have it from me. I can email it to you if you want.
And
well,
is it also didn't from the board?
I'm sure.
I was just curious which schools as well.
All schools. I think there are classrooms in each school.
Okay. I know that Drew wanted to have some additional conversation around the District Finance Advisory Committee. And then I can sum it. We have time left. I can still give you an update on what's been going on with the Hadley parking lot project. So do we want some additional conversation around the Advisory Committee?
Well, why don't you? I assume you have something to share with us to drive the conversation.
You know, actually, it was more just, you know, I think we had kind of a general agreement that it would be a good thing and we should move forward with that. I know Ann was talking about, you know, what the charge was going to be, you know, from the think tank perspective. And I guess, you know, my question really kind of goes back to Ann and the administration. You know, what procedurally, how do we move this forward?
Well, first decision would have to be made as to whether it's an administrative committee or a board committee. So that's the first thing that you would need to make as a recommendation to the total board, I think. And then if it's an administratively appointed committee, then we would begin to gather names, potential names of people who might serve on a committee such as this, probably bring those names back to the finance committee, ask, you know, if there are names that you have in addition to those names. I would suggest it's an invitation based on particular criteria that we're looking at, rather than, you know, in the past we've done open. Anybody who wants to participate, you know, let us know. I'm not sure this is the right forum for that. I think we want some particular expertise. We have to decide on the number of people we want to participate. You know, is it 5 people, 10 people? And how often? And then specify the charge. And as I said, I would think that the charge for this group would be to help review some of the long-range financial planning that we've done and share our challenges and ask, you know, get some other expert advice and expert insight from other perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, like the village has done with their, you know, past their long-range plan and stuff. I mean, I wouldn't even mind someone from the village being on ours just from that. They're citizens on that committee. who had gone through that.
A citizen on there from their committee to join.
Who might be interested in being on ours, just because they chose people, I think, with the same type of background to be interested in, and they've gone through this long-range planning already, and would kind of be familiar with the types of things I think we're kind of hoping for.
Okay, so,
so what would you like to, I mean, what would be your timeline? For us to begin bringing you some information.
The first question that you, you raise is it a, is it a board committee? Is it a administrative? It sounds like there's a lot that a administrative committee is much more
flexible.
Okay, so that's, are we in kind of an agreement that it's a administrative committee?
Yes.
If it's a board appointed committee, we have to hold it as an open meeting. These would be open meetings, of course, but we don't have to post an agenda. We don't have to call the meeting to order. We don't have to do public participate. You know, we don't have to run it like a board meeting.
It's a little less.
It's a little less formalized.
Okay. I think that makes sense to have it as a administrative committee. Are you good with that?
Okay, well, why don't we put, we'll start to gather some ideas, frame a charge, and then bring those ideas back. Maybe the, I'm trying to think, Bob and I have colliding schedules in the next month and a half. Maybe by the second meeting of October.
So, do we want to take it to the board for discussion at the next board meeting, or is this just going to stay within the finance committee itself?
Well, it sounds to me like it's just going to stay in the finance committee, but I think we should discuss it with the full board.
Okay, so
the question is, should the board have to take action on that? Would you like the board to take formal action to form an advisory committee?
Sure.
What's the precedent for that?
Well, if I think of previous committees that we formed, I don't think we really did board action. We just did board consensus.
Okay.
Anybody remember anything differently?
No.
You know, boundary committee, the long-range master facilities committee, the policing, none of those were formal adopted. They just were consensus. So
it's just, we bring it to the board.
So you could bring it to the board as one of your board reports and just seek board consensus on that.
Okay, so we could do that.
You could do that tonight.
Okay. And then if we do that tonight, the
October meeting, the 4th, we could at least give you a status update where we are at in our conversations and our
planning. The next finance committee?
Yeah. Which would be October.
I just made a general note here. I'll put together a general concept in terms of what might be expected of this committee, its charge, and so forth with expectations. And I'll put it on the agenda for the first finance meeting in October.
Okay. That's good.
Maybe have a timeline set with it and so forth.
Okay, and that's, I think the timeline is reasonable.
Bob thinks it's reasonable. I think it's reasonable.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, then we just have a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to give the Finance Committee an update on what's going on with the Hadley Courtyard. As you know, this evening we're looking for action to approve the use of pre-construction, pre-project cost for engineering fees. They're approximated at about $15,000. Now, that's what we need to allocate just to really get this project going and off and running. We've met with the city of, as I've indicated earlier, we've met with the city of Wheaton. I met last week with the police department. We've met with the village of Glen Ellen. And this is the very conceptual type of diagram that everyone seems to be in consensus with. However, there have been a couple of small additions, well, a couple of additions since I last given you an update, and that is, this was proposed by the city of Wheaton as well as the village of Glen Ellen Police Department. And that would be to take the buses completely out of the parking lot and then direct them all for drop-off and pick-up along Glencoe. And what we would do is there would be adequate space in here for 17 buses to come to rest if it's ever needed. They have 17 buses at one time. this area would actually be in what they call a third lane or the parkway. As I said, we've discussed it with our governmental agency. They agreed to it.
Are you going to lose parkway grass now?
You will lose parkway grass. We'll bring it essentially to the, we'll probably put a curb in. It would be sidewalk, curbing, and then this sort of third lane, they're calling it. And then there would be a curb that would be set in the pavement itself. It would show a separation between this new sort of parkway parking and then the existing street.
Would you gain parking lost hours then?
What we would do is this parking would, I'm just going to throw some numbers out there. We would say that between 8 and 9 and between 3 and 4, this will be exclusively bus pickup drop off.
Just like Franklin.
Just like Franklin. However, during the those non-peak hours, we'll be putting our diagonal parking in here. And we estimate that we'll get about 43 additional cars parking in there. So it'll take us from about 84 cars in this lot presently to about 136 if we move this process forward. Now, something else that is not included here, but has been discussed and was brought up by the Village of Glen Allen, is that if we would consider making this parkway that's along Hawthorne, making this the third lane also, or some sort of off-street parking, bus drop-off, emergency parking, whatever the case may be. And then, pardon me? Yeah. And also put in some sort of diagonal parking for future
this
needs.
This would be for buses too?
If we ever were to need it. It would be set up to accommodate buses, bus drop-off if we needed, or for that matter, any other type of vehicle.
Would the village pave that parkway? While they're doing the street? I mean, is that something we're paying for or something they're paying for?
You know,
well, that's part, because we've entered into conversations with them, we have not, you know, there have been no negotiations on this, obviously.
In
this
theory, point. It could be
a shared car.
It could be with a shared car.
It could be. Just remember, though, that the Village Line and City of Wheat Line is kind of in here.
Right.
So I don't know, and I will tell you that we did speak to Wheat, and they have no absolute immediate plans. In other words, they're not going to tell me, Bob, we'll be happy to do this in partnership with you next year. But it is on their long-term plan in the next few years to redo Hawthorne from the Village of Glen Allen up to Glencoe here along Hawthorne. So this was just something, area future parking, we just put it out there. Long-term, this is what we would love to do with this site. Again, long-term. We're talking about this right in this area right here would be the existing area of the above ground detention. Dan, I know you had some questions on that. The underground detention would be located in this area, generally this area of the parking lot. And we did some preliminary calculations today. As part of the project as originally or as presented to originally, the stormwater is valued at about $225,000 of total project cost.
All right.
Pardon me?
$225,000
out of about a $900,000 project. Now that does not come to that does not address Steve's concerns or question. Well, what could we do to address long-term use of the site? If we were to do something like that, if we wanted to take into consideration future developing some sort of underground detention, honestly, now would be the time to do it. But we could present a plan about what the future or what the cost could be on that.
Right.
Bob, you said 17. Did you say 17 buses?
That's presently what we have daily drop off and pick up about, I think, 17 routes we have here.
So you're saying you go.
You will go all the way up.
All the way up.
You will go all the way up. Now remember, the only time all those buses are going to absolutely more than likely be there is for the bus pickup at the end of the school day. When they're dropping off, these buses are just, they're coming in and leaving as soon as they drop off. We'll have it ready and accessible should we ever need that many buses to be dropped off. But practically speaking, there's only one time of the day, and that would be at the end of the school day.
They line up on Glencoe right now, all 17 of them, waiting, and then there's some in the parking lot, too.
This was actually
taking up the full lane of traffic when they're waiting.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And that was the genesis behind this request. Would you consider putting in that third lane to get your buses off of the city street?
And would that be a part of this project?
This is a new thought that we've had since we...
And what I can do is we can bid this as a base project with an alternate if we're not really sure if that's the path we want to follow.
From a safety perspective, it's certainly a wise path from the standpoint that you've got cars exiting on Glencoe, and at least at the end of the day, when every bus is lined up, you know, sight lines are going to be not so great there. Still much improved from coming out on Hawthorne, but there are still some safety issues, whereas if you can get the buses off the street, it's a little bit easier to get to see your way out.
This was a result of questions presented by the police, Homer in particular. While you're exploring these options, could you at least take a look at this? And that's what we've done, and I told the finance committee that I would come back with updates as they become available. And this is just an update. So it is 7 o'clock. We need to conclude the CNI meeting.
A quick inquiry. I mean, the fiscal year 2011, the AFR schedule. I mean, how are we, when are we closing the books?
The auditors are here now.
Books have been closed.
Auditors are here now in the audit. And then we're on track to, the AFR will be filed no later than November 15th, as it normally is. And the CAFR will be published, you know, with that round. So they're here for the next 2 weeks, and then we get into developing the report. So we're on the exact same schedule we've been on previous years.
Right, I forgot. How are we going to turn some auditors? Above, below?
Reserves to budget currently or from last year?
Well, we had budgeted our reserves would go up. Did we get more money?
At the end of last year, though.
To be perfectly honest with you, with all the different, with the way that the state has been so delayed on certain revenues provided to us,
uh-huh.
It's difficult to judge at this time. Well, because remember, we had revenues rolling in from the beginning of this fiscal year, revenues trailing as this fiscal year. So really, we're in a good position, but exactly where we are right now, I can't say just because of the way that the revenue stream has been so interrupted.
The auditors need to do that work, too, in terms of accruing.
Absolutely.
Right.
They'll be making accruals out of one fiscal year
right.
into
and that will affect that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But you receive our cash unaudited statement for June.
Mm-hmm.
We're part of the financial.
Yeah, report. I figured we had. I just didn't pay attention to that.
They were the audit report.
Probably was where in our operating expense for people. How much did it?
That's something the auditors calculate.
Yeah, they just arrived today.
Okay.
There was your first day. So your question is so timely.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for this evening then. And if you have any other questions, please give me a call.